We have the whole team together this morning.
Very exciting.
Joe Reed.
Hi.
Nick Davis.
Hello.
And Katie Rich.
Hello, I'm alive.
You are alive, and I'm Nathaniel. And everybody knows me, too.
And you're alive.
Yay, everybody's here.
I am sort of, but the heat, like if I could just live inside a movie theater, but getting to the movie theater, drenched in sweat.
Yeah, you have to pick like a triple feature at right? the AMC 25 and not leave the building. That's the key.
Like I went to Trainwreck yesterday and I was so drenched in sweat by the time I arrived. It was so disgusting. So I felt much like the title character myself.
Yeah. As bedraggled and at your wit's end, yeah.
And then afterwards, my friends wanted to go to this restaurant that was like two avenues away, and I'm like, can't we just eat on the corner here wherever the first restaurant is?
We could have these goobers.
You can have Mr. Seriously. Softy for a meal. I think that's valid.
I heard that on Twitter that Nick was disappointed.
I mean, I liked it, but I was a little disappointed.
Nick, when did you see it?
Friday.
Okay, so I feel like at what point people saw it in the cycle of hype says a lot about, like, the level of disappointment, not whether or not they liked it, but just, as I've been hearing a lot of that from people who have seen it, because I saw it a couple weeks ago, so, like, before a lot of people, but after South by Southwest, so I was, like, a little less hype going into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know. It might make a little bit of a difference.
My personal cycle of hype has been that Derek and I kind of got hooked on the show via YouTube like a week ago. So we've had like 600 skits since then. And I knew it wasn't going to be as, you know, sort of envelope pushing as the show. But I think I had Judd Apatow problems more than Amy Schumer problems, probably.
That was exactly my feeling, actually. Like, I thought it was very, very funny, but storytelling-wise, it was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
I find that sort of interesting. I was talking to somebody about this yesterday because I walked out feeling fairly positive, and yet every specific point about the movie, I feel like I'm finding little flaws here and there. I thought the ending was pretty whack, like in general, mm-hmm. and fairly strange and came out of nowhere and seemed to be saying a thing that I didn't think the rest of the movie was building up to. Where all of a sudden she just sort of, like, gleefully puts herself into this oddly retrograde and submissive position for him, but, like, with this knowing wink, but is it enough of a knowing wink? I had that problem, but it's interesting to me that because I've heard a lot of this, where all of the successes are chalked up to Amy Schumer in the movie, and all of the failures are chalked up to Judd Apatow, and I wonder if that's maybe taking a little bit of the credit away from Schumer, where, like, it is her script, and that is, like, that's her ending. Like, that's, mm-hmm. you know, she gets sole script credit on this thing. So I'm not quite as ready to assume that big, scary man Judd Apatow sort of, like, steamrolled over her in this direction. I do think there are, like, over-length problems with him, and, like, clearly that scene with the intervention with all the Chris Everett cameos.
Nightmare.
Like, has his fingerprints all over it, because that's the type of thing that he does. But I feel like my problems with the ending, I'm not quite as ready to let her off the hook for.
Go ahead, Nathaniel.
I had the same issue with it. I'm remembering reading Nick on, of all movies to bring up, on Short Bus.
Where that's interesting.
It seems very... It seems very, like, envelope pushing and, like, sexually liberated, but then it like, really yanks itself back into being, like, traditional values and let's celebrate monogamy and raising children. And I, like, I'm not against any of that, of course, but, like, it wasn't what I was expecting, and also it seemed a little bit, like, slut-shaming. Yeah. I don't know.
In Short Bus or in Trainwreck?
No, in Trainwreck, because, you know, it's like you're made to... At first, it's just really, really funny, and, you know, there's a line between realizing that someone's life is a mess and sort of judging why it's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that the movie, given the trajectory of the movie, I'm not sure it pulls that off.
Well, I don't see any way this movie could have ended as a rom-com. Like, it's a, you know, it's an untraditional rom-com, but it's really, you know, very straightforward in the plot, as we were saying. I don't think it could have ended in any other way than her getting together with Bill Hader and celebrating that monogamy. Like, that part of it, like, I get what you mean about the ending and what she chooses to do and, like, kind of the role she puts herself into being kind of whack Joe. But I, the fact that it ends with celebrating this relationship between these two people makes sense to me based on the genre and based on the goals that I think the movie had from the very beginning.
Yeah, no, I would, don't get me wrong, I was happy they ended up together. It just seemed very, like, the whole, it seemed a little lecturing, which is not what I was expecting. Because, like, the father is so excessively said to be, like, a bad person, and, like, I thought that the first scene was just hilarious when he's going on and on about the dolls.
Yeah.
And then with all, and I love Brie Larson. There's something about her face that I just want to look at her for, like, two. I always want the movie to be about her if she's in the movie.
I felt the same way, actually. I wanted this movie, too, but I wanted, like, her. Like, I thought the movie did a good job of integrating her story so that she's not just sort of the, like, lecturing sister. They gave her enough of a life, I thought, which was good.
Yes, and I think the movie successfully skirts not shaming people about their sex lives in that scene where she's like, no, you don't want the best sex of your life. I thought that was really clever because she wasn't judging her. She was just like mapping out.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't need quite that much, you know? Which,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Although, like, I don't think that that character has friends over in her house like the friends she has over in her house. Like, and in the same way, I don't think Amy Schumer doesn't know what Doctors Without Borders is. You know, like, there were problems in the writing, I thought, that sometimes weren't sure how broad or how specific to let the situation be. And that way, I was, you know, I'm not saying it's, like, all about Judd Apatow, but I just didn't think they were super great editors of each other. And they probably both needed a director and, you know, who was going to push back and a writer that was going to push back. But there were these kind of competing notes all over the place that I think make the ending count for so much more, because you're kind of waiting for the movie to settle on what it's doing a little bit and who some of these people even are. And when you end with that, it just counts for more when I felt like there hadn't been quite enough coherence up till then.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see how someone who's used to writing sketch and can set up a different world and different stakes and rules for everything for, you know, 5 minutes
for every
time.
Scene, yeah.
Yeah, and why she would have a hard time setting up consistent logic for a 90-minute movie. Like, and I don't know. I mean, Judd Apatow movies, I mean, I think his best ones have set up this really tight, like, real world, like 40-year-old version is absurd, but also pretty realistic. And I don't know why he couldn't kind of guide Amy Schumer in that direction.
I will say, though, for as much as the problems that I had with the ending, I feel like if we're looking towards this particular movie to sort of bear the brunt of monogonormative whatever sentiment in Hollywood, that's kind of a bit of a burden for that for this movie to bear, considering that's basically every movie. And, like, while I feel like a movie that bucks that trend is progressive and wonderful, like, I'm not sure I want to, you know, put it all on poor Amy Schumer that, like, everything in the culture is sort of pointed towards monogamy.
Yeah.
But she does bring it up. Like, she brings it up in that very first scene, so she does sort of call some of that attention to herself.
Well, I think not just in the first scene. I mean, I think that, like, Stephanie Zaharik, who I think wrote an amazing review of it, talks about the sort of way in which the movie is excited about Amy's sexuality and her desire to have sex with lots of people, but even at the beginning is kind of carefully framing it all along so that it doesn't seem that fun. It's, like, just something that she does, like all those montages of, like, you know, guys leaving her house. And I liked that they weren't all, like, himbos or whatever, but it does sort of seem like, even when we're in the parts where she's, like, having a good time, like, seeds are already being planted that like, maybe she's not, or that this right. is this is to be fixed, you know?
Yeah, and the thing that surprised me is I was expecting her to be kind of more of a train wreck to make that seem more disastrous. Like, you totally. Set it up. And I think on the show, she has, like, played characters like that more often. But she's kind of doing this, and you're like, all right, so she, you know, has to do the Walk of Shame on the Staten Island Ferry and, like, sleeps around and has dating John Cena for unknown reasons. But it didn't look like she didn't need an intervention that badly. And I was kind of surprised that they didn't go further with that.
Yeah. But I take, I mean, I don't know if this is Joe's point exactly, but I take the point that, like, she has so made her career so far on all this kind of boisterous, like, out and proud, you know, behavior, and like whatever Julie Louis-Dreyfus calls it when he talks about her pussy all the time, that it would be hard at any moment for her to make the move to say, like, well, I'm not 100% about that, right? Or, like, I might want to, you know, experiment with other ways my persona could go or my life could be. Mm-hmm. And probably everybody would bitch about, like, you're selling out.
You know, like, well,
you're
yeah,
a boyfriend now. Like, yeah, but
there's got to be room for a character to sort of learn and grow, and that kind of character, there, you know, that's the direction that you would have to move in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be misunderstood that I wanted it to end a different way. I thought it was having trouble, like, deciding. That's what I'm saying, because, like, yeah. I did love the sort of notion of someone who is, because I think it's actually a true notion that someone who is used to not being monogamous would, and for short relationships, would have issues dealing with, like, oh, it's a fight, it's over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which I thought was a really interesting thing, that he was confused about that and she was just, like, done.
Yeah.
Those scenes were amazing. Yeah.
So, like, I didn't object to it, I just think the movie had trouble, like, navigating it.
No, I agree with you. And I also think in the process it doesn't give him much of a reason to want to be with her.
Yeah.
Well, he's a very sort of sketchily drawn character, which is too bad, because I feel like Hader has it in him.
He's a really good actor.
He's a really good actor. And, I mean, he could really have dug into a character that felt more real. This guy sort of felt like what was needed to be the complementary angles for Amy at all times.
And that's classic rom-com setup. It's just usually the women who do it. And but it's not commenting on that. I also really wish that character had been better drawn.
Well, yeah, because I actually think that their first sex scene is actually a really good scene.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the only times where I got the sense of why he would maybe be into her, because he was really excited that she brought this different side of him out, and that she was a lot less inhibited than he was.
Yeah.
But then the movie didn't explore that. Like, I thought, oh, that's really cool, but then it dropped that topic, you know?
And yeah,
then it was
weird.
Just like, oh, he's good at sex. Okay.
And it's weird for him to be, like, an inhibited shy doctor who's also just, like, hangs out with LeBron James. Like, they're, like, that. Those three things don't seem to add up, at least the way that the movie presents them. Even though I really like the scenes with LeBron James, it doesn't help define that character anymore.
Well, and even the stuff with, it's sort of similar with the stuff with the magazine, where I feel like it starts off really strong. That scene where, the part where Tilda Swinton's trying to get Vanessa Bayer to not smile is so funny to me. And I thought they set up some really interesting angles, but then they have just, I mean, and you guys know I love Ezra Miller, and I actually think, like, he does an okay job in that sex scene at the end that's supposed to be super bonkers, but, like, that really does come so out of nowhere, and that character is just sort of, like, treading water up until that point, looking for a reason to exist until all of a sudden he does, and it's just, all of that seemed really strangely, and that I think I will put on Apatow, because that's directing, that's just, like, everything is just poorly paced and poorly set up, and they're, you know, I don't know. It felt like there was a lot of potential for a lot of good stuff there. And
yeah.
Well, you have classic Tilda Swinton, for God's sake. And you, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's the classic Apatow problem where he, like, shoots way more than he needs and has to cut stuff and then doesn't realize he's cutting stuff that's essential to making these things funny or making these characters make any sense or, you know, feeling like you're taking advantage of Tilda Swinton. You're right. Like, she's really good in the scenes that she's in, but you have no sense of her being crucial to the overall narrative.
And all that cutting, like, beyond what he leaves out, like, I also thought that the Ezra Miller sex scene was an example of Apatow's catastrophic directing sometimes. because, like, it's not made any more, like, just having the camera be, like, away from them, like, I just felt like we were watching the actors trying to make the scene happen, in a way, rather than feeling like the director had sort of any ideas about whose point of view we should be in, or, like, what the beats of the scene are, and then there are other scenes, like, the last conversation she has with her dad, when she gets mad at him, that just stuck out to me as one of many where we're just constantly, like, they've clearly filmed a scene all in close-up on her and one all in close-up on him, and you just, like, bonk, 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 bonk the whole time. So, like, I'd really like to watch these two sit together and watch them both deal with this moment, right? But, it just seems, like, so clumsily put together sometimes. It's like if Judd Apatow needed a king-size sheet, he'd buy two twin sheets and just sew them together and be like, that's fine, you know?
That's the best analogy I've ever heard about that thing I hate in movies with the shot reverse shot. I'm like, how about a two shot so I can see both actors act?
Yeah. Do you find yourself comparing Apatow to Paul Feig after watching this? Because Paul Feig has kind of become, like, Bridesmaids helped define the Apatow brand, but Feig's movies seem so much more put together on a story level. Like, the scenes seem to make sense. Like, you don't get that bagginess you get in Apatow movies.
I don't find myself comparing them, but now that you said that, I totally see it.
I think ambitious in different ways too, where Feig seems to be ambitious even when he sort of, when you find him taking a bigger bite than he can chew, it's with these kind of, you know, action heavy comedic set pieces, and whereas Apatow just sort of feels like he's spreading flatter, where he's just trying to integrate too much movie into it, sort of like what you're saying, like shooting way too much and having way too much sort of on the plate, but sort of sacrificing anything that makes a ton of sense for the characters. Not anything. Like, it's not like, I feel like I'm being harder on this movie than my initial reaction really was, like, I was very, you know, happy and satisfied. But I do feel like I find myself picking at it more and more.
I feel the same way, and I think it's just because the more you think about it, the more you think about the ways this movie could have been better or funnier. Like, I think it's easier to think of the comedic scenes that lay so flat, and it's so frustrating to watch them fall apart when you know that it's got this many talented people already involved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, like, the feed comparison, like, I think about the scene in Bridesmaids where they drive past Chris O'Dowd to try to get his attention, and Kristen Wiig does all these weird things. It's a really funny scene, and there's, like, four things she does in it, and you know that in an Apatow movie it would have gone on for 5 minutes, and there would have been 10 things that she did, and it just, yeah.
I mean, I guess I feel like I'm being a little bit harder on it than I meant to also, but, because I do also like that his, to the extent he's trying to purposefully show us that lives don't have these tidy structures, and that there's a whole lot going on in every person's life beyond just, like, the main plot or whatever. Totally. Like, I do actually like, I admit that I like that, and I probably sounded like I don't, but I guess I like Feig a little bit better as a director, even though I did like Trainwreck better than Spy as a movie, but I agree that for the reasons that Katie's saying, that I think Feig shapes his scenes a little bit more.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what we're dealing with is two different topics altogether, and I find that there's often a disconnect with these topics when it comes to what is funny and what is good filmmaking. Because I really don't think we have all that many directors that really specialize in sort of, like, comedy filmmaking. They're comedy they're comedy voices.
Yeah.
But they're not really directors. Like, I just don't feel that Judd Apatow is, like, a director.
Well, that's what was amazing about the 12 Angry Men episode of Amy Schumer that she directed. That was real. I mean, it's a parody of 12 Angry Men, but it was directed. Like, a lot of the comedy in that comes from the filmmaking, not just the really funny lines the actors have to say. So she's got potential there should she decide to direct her own feature, which I'm assuming she will if Trainwreck does well.
And I also assume that Hollywood is so sexist, no one was going to let her direct the first one, right? And she also might not have wanted to. Like, that
would have been a lot. Yeah, I don't know if I would chalk that up to sexism even as much as just, well, yeah, who knows.
All kinds
of idiots get superhero movies that they have no business making, so.
Right.
Yeah, but she really did have no big screen.
Yeah, she hadn't made the 12 Angry Men episode yet.
She, like, made this movie. Yeah, if she had wanted to make something sort of, like, smaller and safer, I can see why with, you know, a big studio, somewhat budgeted movie that
I just wish I could imagine that it were ever an option. Like, I think she probably shouldn't have done it, but it just seems a little default that Apatow gets this job. I don't know. And he doesn't have to, you know, he's making the same, for better or worse, he makes a similar movie over and over again, even having started with people with pretty different personas. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But you would tell people to see Trainwreck, right? I've told multiple people to see it.
Yeah, after all that, I would.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Like, it's really funny.
Yeah.
But I just, I guess when I start thinking about it critically, it's not a good film, but it's really funny.
Yeah.
Also, like, to give Apatow credit, he gets good performances out of at least two non-actors in this movie, I thought. I thought that both John Cena and LeBron James acquit themselves fairly well in their scenes, way better than I expected them to.
I thought John Cena was hilarious.
He really was, right?
Yeah.
Even though his character makes no sense, basically.
Well, but, like, Amy Schumer dated a pro wrestler in real life, so, like...
Did she really?
Yeah, Dolph Ziggler, yep.
That's nuts.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, LeBron James is really funny in it. I hope he, my friend Matt Patches wrote a thing in Esquire arguing for his Space Jam, which, honestly, I'd be okay with. It's 20 years old. Like, time for a remake.
That's a lot of money waiting to be made, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
And even some of the scenes that aren't funny, like there's one after a funeral at one point that's a kind of amazing scene that has no interest in humor at all. And
yeah,
like, there are a lot of moments. Like, I didn't feel like it was the kind of movie that I, like, got less into as it went on or anything. Like, from scene to scene, I felt like it could go up or down, and so you always felt like, even if you were in the middle of something you weren't totally thrilled with, the next thing could easily be great, and it often was.
Mm-hmm.
What are you referring to specifically, just so I can remember?
A conversation between two people that goes really badly for, like, gratuitous reasons right after a funeral.
I know what you're talking about.
I'm having memory issues today, I guess.
Gluten-free, French restaurant, pizza, why are you doing this? Let's go back to the car.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Although that ends with that walk to the car is really funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Just like the scene of John Cena being sad on a stoop is not funny until she's like, I actually need this interaction to be over. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being too hard, and I did think it had a lot of interesting textures. I just think, I guess the filmmaking is just a little sloppy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really did love that sisters relationship. I'm kind of a sucker for good sisters relationships.
And you're a sucker for Brie Larson.
Oh, I'm totally a sucker for
Brie Larson. Well, who isn't? What sane person isn't?
Every time she would sort of, like, go off book and just sort of laugh, I was incredibly charmed and delighted, which I feel like is the easiest mark to, like, hit with me, but, like, it's true.
And how great is she at reaction shots?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just, like, tiny little things, just facial expressions. Yep. When it's not even really about her.
It reminded me of how much I love Turn 21 Jump Street, because it's the same kind of thing, where, like, she's not really the focus at all, but she's incredibly valuable as enhancement.
Yeah.
But also the fact, she's, like, 25 and supposed to be married to Mike Birbiglia, who's at least in his mid-30s. It's weird.
I don't know. She projects more. Maybe it's because I've been following her for so much longer, but, like, she projects a little older than that, and he kind of projects a little younger than that, so it didn't really bug me.
Mm-hmm. I guess he's also supposed to be older than her. He has a kid and everything.
Right, yeah. He has a kid. Mm-hmm.
Well, should we move to another type of comedy altogether?
Yes.
Because I'm dying to hear what y'all thought of Tangerine. Did everybody see it?
I actually thought of them as sort of similar.
Oh, really?
Go on.
Yeah, just that, like, the charisma of performers, movie doing something different, kind of ragged energy on purpose was all the stuff going for it. In terms of actually kind of shaping it as a movie that I was like, I'm into this movie. Maybe not. But
I wish Trainwreck had been as well structured as Tangerine. And Tangerine is not what I would think of as a marvel of structure, but it's very straightforward compared to Trainwreck.
Well, I loved its economy. It's just like, this is the story, and it's going to happen in this time frame, and we're going to follow it till it's over.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel like, and I can't think of anything specific right now, so it's sort of a half observation, but I feel like there's a lot of sort of one day movies that happen where everything happens in one day, where you don't get nearly as good of a feel for an actual day unfolding as you do in Tangerine, where it really gets that sense of just like, God, like you haven't been home all day. And you're like, you're sort of like kind of strung out by the end of it. And it's just like, oh my God, like I've been on my feet all day with these people and sort of like walking around the city. And you sort of, you're with them in that kind of sort of on edge way that they're all at. It builds really well to that scene at the donut shop at the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is so much more over the top than anything that would happen in a real day, but feels so marked by the world that it's established.
Oh yeah, like the convergence of all those characters is fairly unrealistic in terms of like, there's no way that wife would have actually been able to like find there. But like it's so, I don't know, by then everything is heightened, I think, just enough in terms of the comedy and how all the characters are sort of at each other that it worked.
Yeah, I really, really liked Tangerine.
It's so funny.
Yeah, it's so funny, and it's so, like, specific and human. I mean, obviously the two women who are the leads are a huge part of it because they're so entertaining to watch, especially the one who plays Cindy. I don't remember her name. I think I've heard various interesting complaints about how trans women are often portrayed as prostitutes and victims, et cetera. And like, I'm interested if any of you guys have a take on that. But I felt that it was so specific about these characters and made them such well-rounded characters that I couldn't see room to complain about them being portrayed as prostitutes compared to, you know, other trans characters on screen.
Yeah, I feel like if they were flattened characters, it would bother me. But I feel, and I feel like it's also that problem of all the representation of one demographic has to fall on one movie, which I never feel like is fair.
Right. Yeah.
So it's on, you know, other movies now to create more varied characters. But as far as this one, I think there's no way that I can just, you know, flatten any of these characters into just like, well, she's a prostitute. That wouldn't be in the first five words of my description of either one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I feel like with a movie as rich as this, it would feel really uncharitable for me to make that a primary complaint. Like, it's certainly worth discussing. But I don't know. What do you guys? Maybe I'm being too easy.
No, I agree. I mean, I feel like if there were a movie out that starred Laverne Cox, we would have to have the conversation about, like, why is this incredibly, you know, sort of cis-normative, beautiful, gorgeous woman standing in for trans women of color who are so often consigned to being sex workers and prostitutes, you know, like, which would also be true, right? But, like, because there's only one movie, you're going to talk about what the movie does, but also all the trans stories that the movie's leaving out. So we just need more movies. But, yeah, I wondered that a couple of times, and maybe I only really wondered that in a pointed way, when there were scenes that were that were looking for comedy in moments like, this guy's totally gonna beat her up, you know, or like in the car, or moments that really got at something that's incredibly precarious about so many trans women's lives. Mm-hmm. But I thought the movie was fairly adept in how it got out of those things. Like that scene with the police was pretty was not at all what I was expecting at that moment, and was
pretty
interesting, and everybody managed to be funny in that scene without it being like a farce, you know.
I love that scene with the police because it suggested this texture to the way that, and because, you know, I know very little about trans prostitutes in Los Angeles, so I was like learning things in every scene about how their lives work, and the police just added such a great texture to what the day-to-day life is for people around here, and in such a humane, like, what this movie does so well is give everyone a story and kind of dig into what makes all of these people tick. And even the police in their, you know, small, very silly scene accomplish that.
Yeah.
Well, I like any movie that sort of creates an ecosystem like that,
mm-hmm.
where everybody sort of, you get the sense of not just what happens on this day that we're watching, but what happened yesterday and what's going to happen tomorrow. And everything feels like it extends far beyond the borders of the movie in a very realistic and natural way, which I liked.
Yeah, the way they run around to specific spots expecting to find Chester and, like, the guys they meet there and who they talk to. Like, you know, everyone knows where to find everybody on a given day. It's got this, like, small-town feel to it.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. That's actually something I really loved about it because it... I mean, I think all of the things that are ultra-specific about it are one of the reasons it's so essential.
Yeah.
Because so many movies don't have that where you sense that, you know, the film completely understands that world, like you're saying with the ecosystem, Joe. That I just felt, for something that's as heightened as it is, it felt so authentic to me. And also I love the notion of big cities as small towns, because they really are like that if you live in them. Because people outside of big cities don't think of them that way, but people who live in big cities do think of them that way. They're like, this is my neighborhood, you know?
Yeah. Especially within a specific world as transgender prostitutes. Right. Like, that's got to be a really small world.
Go ahead, Nick.
I'm wondering what you guys thought of, like, the filmmaking itself, because it's gotten so much press for the iPhone thing. But I saw it at Sundance, and I actually didn't know until, like, 2 days later that it was shot on an iPhone.
Same. I don't know how you would.
Right, I but now when people go to it, that's what they've read about, you know?
That first scene, to me, looked really rough and really ugly, and I thought I was going to be in for a long day. No pun intended. but after that, it really... I didn't notice it. It looked to me... like most any indie low budget movie, that it never sort of, I never had that moment of just like, what is this filmed on an iPhone or something? Like,
well, that first scene, I think, is a great scene. It's a great bait and switch because you're set up in this tiny space and you're like, okay, low budget movie, like, not experienced actors, here's what we're doing. And then the camera just breaks loose after that, which is such it's such a great freeing moment when that happens.
Oh, yeah. She goes, like, off on her rampage with the
And it starts the really music. Loud house music for the first time. Yeah.
The music is amazing. Like,
it is.
And both in the, like, Nina Garcia way that it makes the movie seem really expensive, but also that the music is great. Like, and I agree. I didn't. I don't know that I would have known this was shot on an iPhone if I hadn't heard it. It was way not. I liked how the movie looked. I actually, like, I feel like every few years Michael Mann spends $150 million on a movie. Like, look what digital photography can do. And I'm like, I don't like looking at this. This is gross. And
or like Full Frontal, I feel like, was sort of like that too. Where it's just like, oh, I see. You can make it look as cheap as possible.
Right. The Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I liked the textures of this and also didn't think that much about them as it went on.
Yeah, I'm just curious that if people feel like that's doing the movie a disservice or if it's helping it, you know, because it gives its people some reason to be, oh, I'm curious. You know,
I think that's really smart, yeah.
I think it's a gimmick that serves the texture of the movie, too, that it's, you know, intimate and it's kind of film. It feels like it's filmed guerrilla on the streets in an area you don't usually go to. Like, that all fits the vibe of this is, like, some kind of participatory thing that a bunch of people did that you didn't know about and kind of has emerged from underground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And good luck trying to get even $10 million out of Sony Pictures Classics to make this, right? Like, so... smart job, everybody. But was I the only person that... I mean, it did feel long to me, and I know it wasn't, but I think I at some point had seen... as many scenes of Cindy walking in a fury as I needed to. And I was pretty eager to get out of that donut shop at the end. Like, and I didn't feel like the movie had a scene there, really.
I feel like that goes on quite a bit. And we get maybe one or two too many revolutions of Chester and who's the other woman? Who he was seeing on the side.
Is that right? I don't know.
Think so. I think that's right. I could see that. I think because it sort of ends up spitting our two main characters out at that laundromat at the end, which I thought was such a great scene.
Yes.
That I think I sort of quickly, you know, got past the perhaps over length of the donut shop scene.
Well, I was so entertained by the clash of all the characters that you get in the donut shop, by the arrival of the mother and the... And also the fact that it was, like, the fact that every Armenian cab driver in L.A. knows each other that got her there, which is, like, another part of the texture of this movie. Mm-hmm. And then James Ransom, I was, like, so excited to see him and interested by what he was doing with that character. And I see what you mean, but I think, like, Joe kind of quickly forgot about it because the movie ends on such a great note.
Also, this is going to end up on everybody's sort of odd list of best Christmas movies pretty soon, right?
Yeah.
Every Christmas movie that has, like, Die Hard at the top. Like, this
yeah.
Like my friend who watches Eyes Wide Shut on Christmas every year.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. With the Merry Christmas Eve, bitch.
Oh, man. Everyone should split a donut on Christmas Eve from now on.
Oh, my gosh. Twist my arm. Okay.
I just think... I'm hoping that this movie gets some momentum in theaters. It's so hard now for that to happen for any movie.
True.
But I think Sean Baker is such a treasure, and I only recently, like, started seeing his movies, thanks to Nick, with Starlet.
Yay!
Which is so good also. So I'm really, like, excited about his career, and I need to watch all the other ones because I know he's made a few more.
Is it doing the VOD thing at the same time, or it's just in theaters right now?
It's just in theaters.
Yeah.
Okay. How long? I wonder how long that's going to last.
I don't Although, know. I mean, I hope on, it gets some momentum, because it is really funny. I can't imagine, like, that many people who would show up at it at all, you know, not recommending it to people once they did.
Although, once it's on VOD, you don't have to leave the house to see it.
Yeah, that's true.
And your house can be air-conditioned.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me that I just prefer to go to movies in general, but... I think comedies are so much more fun in the movie theater than at home.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, if I had seen a train wreck with, you know, just my friends that I went with, it would have been fun, like, when we watch Inside Amy Schumer. But it's just, like, the energy of the theater, because it was packed and people were laughing so hard that you missed some jokes, and it's such a great feeling, I think.
Well, see, you comedies. Go to packed theaters, though, so I feel like I get the same experience, because I go to... near empty theaters or watch it at home. So, but
why,
I could see.
But we live in the same city, so why do you suppose that is?
I think I dislike other people more than you do.
No, but you just say you go to empty theaters.
Yeah, well, because I go like at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like, yeah, as empty as I can manage to find them. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I get it now. You're purposely doing that.
Right. I'm not, like, buying out every ticket in a theater. Yeah.
Through your church.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they missed a marketing opportunity for Tangerine.
Yeah.
Church groups. Church sales.
So I saw it at 5 o'clock yesterday on a Friday, and... no, yesterday was Saturday. That doesn't matter. You can cut that. Okay. But the audience was like half the people that you're talking about, Nathaniel, who were probably going to immediately tell their friends, you have to see this. And the other half were people my parents' age who clearly were coming to a review-driven movie and were totally shocked by what they were watching. And I walked out behind a group of 5 or 6 of them, all with white or gray hair, and I heard one woman say to the others, I mean, I think that's just... I mean, a transgender, I've heard from my kids, has become a thing. So, like, it may or may not, you know, benefit from everybody's word of mouth, I guess, but...
That is funny.
That's really good.
And, and I was seeing some pretty unhappy husbands in that group of 5 or 6.
I mean, I guess in the first scene, you kind of know what you're in for. Like, if you're welcome to leave after that, because it's it's not hiding what it's going to be.
Right.
I hope this doesn't... Gender's
become a thing.
I hope this doesn't just... do a disservice to the movie, because I don't really think it's that comparative, but when the first time I saw it, I thought, if John Waters were starting out today...
Oh, totally.
I think... Well, I expect that it'll be on his top 10 list at Art Forum.
Yeah.
But it's the type of thing that, you know, maybe he would have made if he was a young filmmaker, you know?
It made me think of early Greg Araki, too.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
Although somebody would have had to die a grisly death.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes.
Yeah, this is more humanistic.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So, yeah. So, high recommendations.
Yeah.
Very much so. See it.
Don't take your parents, I guess.
Unless they're interested in this thing, this new
thing.
Yeah,
the trans thing.
Yeah.
They come up and ask you, what's this new transgender thing I keep hearing about? Well, I have
if you're freaked out by the first scene, you shouldn't wait for when Sandra Bullock shows up. It's going to be this. This is it.
Although, but also, if you're showing up looking for, you know, Chechen rebels on the Georgian border or whatever.
I'm right.
Wrong movie also.
Did you guys see that, response to my tweet about Tangerine and Movie Phone?
No.
Oh.
So, well, I was looking for showtimes because I've seen it already, but I was trying to take my friends. I was looking for showtimes and I thought it was playing at 3 theaters in New York, but then when I went to look up the times, it was showing the Estonian one for the Eleanor Bunham Center. And I was like, crap, because that's the theater I wanted to go to. And then one of my friends tweeted that he was at the theater to see it, and I was like, wait a second. So I call the theater, call around, and it was actually Tangerine, Sean Baker's Tangerine.
Yeah.
But the ads in Movie Phone were all for the Estonian Oscar nominee.
So they pulled from the wrong database entry or whatever.
Right. Oh.
Some bullshit cis conspiracy.
Like. Yeah, right. That's also possible.
So I, you know, tweeted out, like, if you're curious, like, to see this, it is playing at this thing, even though, you know, the listings are wrong.
Yeah.
And somebody tweeted back, oh, I'm at the theater, and the usher is loudly screaming, this is the one about prostitutes, to people.
I'm going to start screaming that in whatever movie I want. Like, second best exotic Marigold Hotel, I'll just scream that.
Yeah.
At my train wreck screening yesterday, the movie's supposed to start at 10. It's nearly 10:15, the trailers haven't started. And then the trailers start and they're like, put on your 3D glasses. And there were a lot of people in the theater for a 10 a.m. And people were sort of like looking around at each other. Is everybody having the same thought that I am? And so there's like a 3D trailer and then the pre-roll stops and then the lights come on. And still everybody's like, train wreck, right? And we're just like, but nobody's really doing anything about it.
Because we live in Wally now.
Yeah. And then finally, and so in the meantime, I'm like, well, this is suspicious. So I go on the Fandango app on my phone and I'm like, what kind of 10:15 movie are they going to try and spring on us? And I look and it's like Minions 10:15. And I'm like, start fucking Minions right here. I'm going to riot. Finally, this guy sticks his head out of the production booth and is like, we just want to make sure that nobody's here for Minions. And everyone's like, no.
They
like,
think I am.
Right, exactly. Near disaster.
I think the Tangerine thing is going to continue to be a problem because now that it's in theaters and starting to expand, next week, like on Tuesday, the Estonian drama comes to DVD.
Oh, Lord.
This is why you name your movie the one about prostitutes. Yeah. It's like,
yeah, like take a clue from Friends. The one about...
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, it's not as fun as Crash, but it's up there.
It is up there.